Blog Talk Radio.
You ready to rock this town by now?
Greetings and welcome to the 65th and a special Monday episode of Rock This Town Radio with TC. I'm your host, TC Clark, and along with my production assistant, Cuddles the Cat, we're coming to you from our Bloomfield studio in the 412, that's Pittsburgh, PA. Tonight, it's Marshmallow Overcoat Monday, as we welcome founding member, frontman, songwriter, guitarist, pianist, manager, and he probably drives the bus, Tyler Calkins. Welcome, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, boy, it's been a while since we talked, but
yeah,
I'm so glad you're... And as always, Carl's here.
Greetings and salutations, everybody. Glad to be
here.
We just
found out before we came on the air that, you know, Tyler grew up in Bradford. And as a young tot, he visited Carl's music store on several occasions. And now, did you take those piano lessons from that lady through the store, or did you just, there's kind of an association there?
She was one of the local teachers, but she was not really connected to the store. She would come in occasionally and get music and that, but
yeah. Well, good.
Yeah.
That was one of my. Go ahead, Tyler.
Oh yeah, she taught me. Actually, she was very nice. She'd come over to my house and teach, which, you know, being maybe 7, 8 years old when I first started, that was key. That way, I wouldn't really be able to get out of practice and when it was tough.
Yeah. Yeah, you couldn't say the car had a flat tire or anything like that if you're stuck at your own house. That was
exactly
one of the first questions I was going to ask you. What came first, the piano or the guitar? And apparently the piano.
Well, you know, I'd say it's the first one I played seriously. I actually did have a guitar when I was really little, but I didn't learn how to play it properly. I just kind of strung all the... or tuned all the strings into like a chord and played it like that. So piano was my first real instrument for sure.
Okay. So did you play in high school and all that? I mean, band or anything like that?
I just dabbled in it then. I did play off and on my own, but it really wasn't until I was about 18 that I decided I had to do music. And it was right around the time I was going off to college. So it was perfect timing, really.
Good. Now, were your parents, you said you had a piano at the house, were they musical?
They were in their own way. They were big music fans. And my grandfather, my mother's dad, was a really good singer. But my parents, they didn't pursue music at all. I think they could have had some talent, but they were all about me doing it until I got a little too into it, you know, when I was a teenager. But then they came back around again, so it all worked out.
And it's like, you know, this music's great, but there is schoolwork to do. So
exactly.
Yeah. Your chances of being a rock star slim to none, so you better learn. And you went to Penn State, right?
Yes. Yep.
Did you play with any bands down there or just screw around with it a little or?
I did, and it was little by little. When I first went, it's something I always kind of secretly wanted to do, but it kind of took me failing at business class. Well, not even really failing, but just realizing business was so competitive down there. And even my advisors and everyone pretty much told me I'd be crazy not to go for music because I didn't have my own band yet, but I played with a couple of bands down there and was kind of learning the ropes when I was maybe 20, 21. And that would bring us to right around the time Marshmallow Overcoat was formed because that I realized I needed an outlet to actually try to do it more seriously.
Well, you guys got together in, what, 2008?
Yep. So that was right before my 21st birthday. Yep.
Okay, and your first lineup was who?
Well, that was just myself and Dave Verbosi, who he's still with me to this day.
Yeah.
And
you guys co-write a lot, too.
Yes, yeah, he's co-written probably at least a third of the songs with me, and Anthony Cavallaro joined soon after, maybe at most a year later, before we really recorded too many things.
Yeah, Ryan Cannon jumped in, and that was pretty much the formation. That's when I basically got to know you guys and first started hearing you, and I don't think you even had anything recorded when I first got together with you guys. One thing I want to say about Anthony, he's listening. You're going to like this, because when I first heard you guys, Anthony, he was a good enough drummer. Good enough. He was doing his job. Every time I saw you guys, he got better and better and better. And if anybody grew in that band, you know, other than you and Dave working together, Anthony really turned into a quality drummer. And he should be proud of that.
Sure did. Oh, and he, it's funny, just the other night he had one of his best shows yet, so I'd have to agree with you.
Well, am I wrong? Was he a bass player originally?
No, he wasn't a bass player. No, but he really was just starting out. It's not that Dave and I had played in a ton of things, but we'd had maybe a slight more experience. So, and also, it was right around the time when Ryan and then Greg McFarlane and eventually Al Hancock, that was all pretty close. And Jason Wood would be, I don't want to miss anybody. But, all those guys jumped in right around the same time. And I really think they helped us grow on stage. But all of us younger guys, me, Dave.
I believe that. Yeah. I believe that because you did. You're lucky you surrounded yourself with some of the best talent that you could find around there. And Anthony kind of picked that up. He realized, hey, I'm a damn drummer, man. You know, and he just got better. And I want him to know that I realized that I recognize how he was progressing every time I saw you guys. So, I mean, the whole band did too.
And you'll find the drummers a lot of the times are like the most social guys in the band. Like a lot of bands, I meet the drummer first, and sometimes he's definitely been good about that too. He's a really
good,
easy guy to get along with.
Oh, yeah, he's got a great personality. It just works out well. Okay, before we get into the music, Ed, thank you for giving me a playlist, and you put it in chronological order, which is cool because when I was putting the songs in the studio, I could see how you guys are growing and progressing as a band. Because when you first started out, you wanted to be a cover band with a twist, I think you called it, something like that, or, you know, cover band with an edge, you know, we're going to play what everybody else is playing, but we're going to play, you know, play it our style. So let's get into the first two songs. Okay. We're doing Faces on the Floor and She's Got Revolution. Now, are those both off the same album?
Faces on the Floor was off the Beyond Safari album. And that was our second album, but our first really professionally recorded one.
Yeah.
And then She's Got Revolution was the following album, the third one. But
okay.
It's they could kind of be grouped together because they were recorded right by each other.
They play well together. Okay, Faces on the Floor, Marshmallow Overcoat. Okay, Pace is on the floor, and she's got Revolution now. Before I get back to Tyler, Carl, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Listening to those.
I'll tell you one thing.
Hold on. I got a question for you. Listen to those two songs. Who do you think Tyler's earliest influence was?
Just about to go there. I'm not sure exactly who, but I hear so much 60s in this, particularly in that last song.
Yeah.
Because you start with the Indian influences in the tabla. And then She's Got Revolutions. I'm going back to She's Got Everything by the Kinks. Of course, I'm a Kinks fan, but I don't think that's it. But there's so much.
I do love that song. I know that song. Yeah, great one.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going with early Beatles, because I know you're a huge Beatles fan. And
honestly, you both are right, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, it really felt like it. It had that 60s, era free love and all that sound to it. And you definitely captured that. And that's what I thought when I was listening to this. I go, I know damn well he's a Beatles fan. And I know damn well he liked the early Beatles. So that's where that came from. You want to say something about those songs at all, or, the influence of them, or where they came from, or?
Yeah, I could say a few things. I would mention the Byrds, too, of those 60s bands. I hear a bit of that now.
Yes, there you go.
Yes.
Yep.
That's it.
and Faces on the Floor was really my first attempt at writing a single. And I'm a big John Lennon fan in particular, so that may have been a main influence, some of his maybe mid-Beatles, if anything, like 65-ish.
Yeah.
And then She's Got Revolution was a bit messier, because around that time we were dealing with an indie label. And long story short, we kind of wasted time and money recording stuff, but we at least got that song out of it. And it was definitely the first of ours to get much traction. So it was our first semi-successful song, I guess you could say.
Good. Well, it was a good basis for what you're doing. And then, you did have that Ravi Shankar sound to it at the beginning of it.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, the Byrds. I didn't even think of the Byrds. That was it. Nailed it. Okay, let's try two more songs. We're going to have Wait For Me and See the Plan. Here we go.
Bye. Worst of all, it's all for now. We're giving up, it's just memories. Lonesome call, gone to pop, we're shutting up. And hey, yeah, I think it's easy to see. We're falling apart. I can try to with my back against the wall.
Your Kinks song, Carl.
Actually, I was going to say, Tyler, when did you turn into Bob Dylan?
Dylan. That album was a bit more lyrical than some of the ones before, and this is where we were progressing a bit. And you know, that song was recorded in Pittsburgh, of all places. At my friend Rick Gersick's studio, and that song was a waltz in B flat, maybe to annoy my bandmates, but
but yeah. I understand that.
And we had a music video for it, and you know, we'd had some band member changes around this time. It was all positive, and I was also doing some solo stuff starting to, and but yeah, I thought those were two of the better songs from that time period, and the first one, Wait For Me, was co-written and started by Dave Verbosi, who, you know, is my co-writer for, you know, several songs. And then the second one, See the Plan, was me kind of doing an exercise, and you caught me trying to write more lyrics than I had in the past.
I have to ask you, okay, how old are you now?
Oh, 35.
You're 35. What did your parents have the 60s influence on you, or is this just something you kind of discovered on your own that you realized that this could be a wheelhouse for you? What, where'd that come from?
Probably both. Yeah, probably both. Yeah, and they were probably the main culprit. I ran with it, and then, like we said, when some of the other guys joined the band, and I started just jamming a bit with maybe some Grateful Dead fans and things like that, I actually got into some more modern stuff as well. But we'd say like 60s to 90s when we were first starting off more as a cover band, like you would see.
Well, it's a beautiful throwback as far as the genres go, but I mean, you did bring them into modern times. You know, it's not like we're listening to an Iron Butterfly cover band or anything like that. And that's another thing I wanted to bring up. I have zero notes for this show because I figured I'd just be able to wing it with you. Another one a question I'll ask you now is, okay, you play a lot of local shows. And like with Jeff Fetterman last night, I called him an original artist in a cover band town. How do you make your set list for these local shows? I mean, you have to appease the ones that want to come out and hear Freebird. And, you know, the songs they're familiar with. And it's hard to play your originals. I mean, like play a whole set of originals. It's a short attention span market you play in. That, you know, they like familiarity. They like to hear something that, oh, yeah, there's a song by Genesis or whatever. And how do you balance your originals with your covers?
Well, I would say a few things on that. Well, of course, it depends on the show because sometimes we do have the opportunity to play a lot of originals, if not all. But I know what you're saying. There's certain, especially those bar gigs, and I can't take the smoking atmosphere like I used to be able to.
Yeah,
like we were talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, that's
before.
What happened last week. Yep.
Yeah. It was just a couple of nights, but I really have to cut those sorts of gigs out. So the worst it's been, you know, is I think our originals have at least. That we may have had decent originals before we were even a decent live band, and we were fortunate there because that was one thing before I could play well. I thought at least some of my ideas were halfway there, and so we were able to even at first throw in at least maybe a half dozen original songs over the course of a few hours. But the way we do it now. And sometimes we're lucky and can do an album release show, and you know the town's become more and more supportive over the years. And when we travel, especially to certain places like you know, with festivals, they want to hear originals. But what we do now is I probably play an original. I'd like to say every other song, like because that's how my solo shows are. But with the full band, I'd say one every three or every four.
That's a good ratio. That's a real good ratio for being a local cover type band that people come out to hear the songs they're familiar with. You can work in one out of three or one out of four. That's fantastic.
Exactly. I have to kind of differentiate the local versus regional gigs. And we don't take as many of the ones in town as we used to. And it's not that we don't want to, but you know how that goes, just busy.
Yeah.
I'm happy the other guys are still, they all have day jobs. You know, I do music as a living and like, you know, a couple of the other guys do as well. But the other guys in Overcoat right now, Al, Dave, and Anthony, the fact they can do it as often as they can, I'm thankful for.
Well, good. And that also frees you up for a broader radius as far as where you can travel to do the shows.
Good
you
point.
Know, like you could go. You can go out on Thursday night and do a show out of town, not have to worry about, you know, somebody doing a job in the morning or whatever. But, okay. Carl, you got any questions?
No. I'm just interested in hearing the music. I really like the influences. This is when TC talked to me, you know, I hadn't heard your music, and to be honest, I'm basically a virgin at this point. As far as your music, but I'm really, really digging the 60s vibe and that sort of thing. I mean, I'm the oldest of the crew here. I'm in my mid 60s now, and I grew up in the 60s and 70s. And to know that music still has an impact on today's really like rancid pop culture
crap that you hear most of the time. It's nice to know. It really
is. Yeah, it's a good little throwback. And you know what? I hate to compare bands, like say, oh, you sound like blah, 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 or blah, blah, blah. But I get a real big Wilco feeling about you guys.
Oh, I think that is a big compliment. My wife and I, we've seen Wilco twice, and they're among our favorites. So
I get that feeling just because of the versatility of all the music. But let's get back to the tunes. And this one, all right. First of all, where'd the name come from?
Okay, where's your band's name? Make it quick. Okay, from The Band, who's one of probably my favorite band other than The Beatles. I'd say The Band and The Beatles and Billy Joel are actually probably my biggest influences, which I know Billy Joel's kind of a curveball sometimes, but
yeah.
That
well,
was way back.
Oh, you're a piano player. I get that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's not surprising.
But Marshmallow Overcoat is from the movie The Last Waltz, and Richard Manuel, one of their lead singers, had originally wanted to call the band Marshmallow Overcoat. So, long story short, he mentions it in Took It and Used It.
I knew that story because I'm a big Last Waltz fan, and I assume that's where you got the new. And then I saw there's some band there was in the '80s in Arizona that spelled it, you know, with an A instead of an E like you guys, but I knew where that name came from. We never talked about that before either. So
yes,
okay.
We'd had the band for years before we realized the Arizona band. If anything, you know what? I'm glad we spelled it differently. It seems to work out.
Yeah, because it could turn into a big bitch fest. Like we had a name first, blah blah blah. So.
Oh, yeah.
The reason I brought this up, our next song is called Marshmallow Overcoat. And we're going to be following that with Really Coming Home. So here it is.
This song is called Marshmallow Overcoat. Three, two, one. Softly
yes, I know I'm falling straight into the fold. I'm being places I'm not sold on, and there's no turning back. Yeah, and you really don't know.
Okay, kind of your theme song, I guess, Marshmallow Overcoat and Really Coming Home. And I'm starting to feel the metamorphosis of the band with these songs. They seem to be getting a little more involved, a little more, you know, musically, where, you know, it's, you're not saying that you're just basic before, but they're starting to get a little more complicated.
Yeah, we went up to Buffalo to GCR and Mammoth Recording Studios. GCR is actually owned by Robbie, the bassist of the Goo Goo Dolls. And so that was being at that studio helped us so much for our two most recent albums, Jumping Sharks, which is what Really Coming Home is from, and then Ghost in the Doorway, our most recent.
We'll hear from those both. We had Jeff on last night, like I said, and he recorded at that studio too. And I can't remember the engineer. Yeah, I can't remember the engineer's name, but he said that guy was really, you know, really added stuff to it, you know. Like he walked in. Yeah, he walked in with a certain feeling like this song's going to go this way. And by the time he left, it was, you know, a masterpiece.
Yeah, and I don't want to guess on his, but I know we worked with Brad Loucher, and he was amazing. I think there's a few fellas up there and ladies too who are just amazing.
Carl, do you remember if that was the name, Brad Loucher?
I'm not sure. I can't. Yeah. I can't really say. It sounds familiar though. I will say that.
Okay, so before that, all your recordings before that, were they just like local basement studios and stuff? And this was your first, I want to say, big time studio that you went to.
Yeah, I would say, the others were maybe halfway there. And that's not putting anybody, like the studio in Pittsburgh was nice. The studio in State College was nice. But getting to GCR was kind of you're right. That was definitely a big step up for us as far as getting the quality we'd always wanted.
Yeah, it makes you feel like you've actually gone from the minor leagues to the major leagues when you get into that kind of situation. So tell me about Marshmallow Overcoat, that song. What were you thinking when you wrote that?
You know, that was, I had written a few songs with a friend of mine, Danny Glassmeyer, providing lyrics. And he's a writer, poet, who, an old friend of mine, he just contributed for a few songs when, you know, a few of the other guys in the band weren't around. And after he contributed a few, I thought to myself, well, geez, I need to get back on my horse and write some lyrics. And doing an autobiographical song, it's funny you mentioned Wilco, because Wilco has a self-titled song, and that may have actually given me the idea to do it.
Ah, there we go.
So,
got a little full circle there.
Yeah, maybe a bandmate suggested it too. I don't want to get – I could see Ryan or Jason having that idea and saying, try that, and then I obliged.
Yeah, did you have the last waltz in the back of your mind while you're writing that, or –
I don't know if I had that. That's funny you say that. I do think I was trying to tie it together a little bit with the last waltz. I think I'd forgotten that, but you're right. Yep, just a little bit. Because sometimes, you know, influences, maybe you don't think of them the whole time you're writing a song, but they'll come through a little bit. And I think the band, they're definitely in that song.
And I think once, you know, like when you write a song, you're focused on writing this song. And when it gets produced and it gets put out there, somebody goes, hey, wait a minute. That kind of, I can see this influence in there. And you, like you said, you didn't even think about it, but subconsciously it was there. So and it takes somebody else to point it out. That's why I'm here, dude.
Seriously.
Yeah, that's why I make the no bucks. Okay, let's move on.
Sorry, I can't right. pay, okay?
Yeah, there you go. I know. It's just a fucking privilege to work with you, Carl. That's all. Okay, so.
Yeah, right.
All right, really coming home.
Just the guy that claps for me, okay?
There you go. You're easy to please. Okay, Really Coming Home came off what album?
Well, it was actually originally a solo song of mine on the Late to Fly album of mine, which was a solo album. But then at that time, then we realized what the band could do going up to GCR.
Yeah.
And I had to write a bunch of songs on the fly. Dave was doing the same thing to chip in. And Really Coming Home became basically the song we filled the album with, reusing it up at GCR. It was on the Jumping Sharks album. So that would be...
Okay,
go ahead, TC.
No, go ahead. What are you saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if there's one Marshmallow Overcoat album to listen to, I would say it would either be Jumping Sharks or Ghost in the Doorway, because we recorded them up at GCR and Mammoth, and they were such better engineered albums, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the rest of our songs tonight come off both those albums. Smokescreen and Stop You Now are both off Jumping Sharks. Let's hear them now. Okay, that was Smokescreen and Stop You Now. And we talked about, as we listen to these songs, you know, how the band is growing and how the band's kind of morphing into something else. I'm starting to get more of a harder rock guitar-driven sound off these two songs. You know, that's what I'm feeling. And I know a lot of it has to do with the engineering that you had in that studio, too.
Yeah, those two in particular were more hard rock and a little bit more modern influence, but we also wanted to retain, you know, the classic rock, especially I think the next couple will show that more, but I think it was at the time we were excited, though, definitely to take it a little bit more rocking on those songs. Just I think we were excited to be at that studio in the
sure.
first place, probably.
Well, yeah, it has yeah. to be like, you know, you have to be in awe of just being there, you know, like all the great music that came out of that. Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, all the professional equipment
and
everything.
They recorded an Iris there of all things. That is one of the many, but that one, not even one of my favorites, but such a huge, huge song of theirs.
Oh, that song launched their career. It's funny, when I saw the Goo Goo Dolls, they said that, you know, like Johnny Resnick was on stage, he's saying, you know, they're wondering where we're going to go with this. We got to go back to college. We got to get real jobs. He said, just overnight, you know, here we are because of Iris.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, you know, it'd be the feeling you have walking into another studio like Sun or Chess or something like that and just think of all the great music that's come out of there. Carl, you're quiet.
Yeah, I have been quiet.
I like it.
It's interesting. These two songs definitely have more of a rock feel. I'm feeling more of like 70s and 80s. But I wanted to go back a little bit and just ask a question. We were talking to Tyler before the show, and I think we mentioned it that he also took piano lessons. And I was just wondering, you know, learning to read music and that, what you do when you start piano lessons, did that hinder you at all, or did you – did you just sort of incorporate it, or did you just like say, "Now I'm just going to learn to play," and because that also affects your songwriting. So I'm hearing in these two songs more of a they're still structured, but the you know, the, like doing the waltz in B flat, right, which would piss off your people and things like that. I'm just wondering. How that all sort of transpired. You see, I'm a keys player, so that's why I'm asking, more or less.
Yeah, by the way, he's a church organist. So
awesome.
he plays strictly off sheet music. That's why he's asking you know. Yeah.
Well,
so.
You know, I learned to read music pretty young, but I had kind of learned by ear first. And you know, it's interesting. You're one of the few people to ever put it like that, and you're right. It can hinder you. And I remember when I was about 12 years old, I did hit like a block where I'd kind of been writing secretly, and I was taking piano lessons. They were two complete different things. And I realized, you know, I was just never going to be a great note reader and things, and I wasn't going to be a great classical pianist. And, you know, I had to go back to this a bit in college and improve. But at the time, it was great. I moved back to Bradford around that time because we did move around when I was a kid. And I was able to kind of incorporate them together. And I do think Debbie Harrison helped me a lot with that because she'd encouraged me to write and, you know, do the books that I had to do. And I still never really, like, for me, I don't want to say it's easy to write a song, but I really work with people based on, you know, like how a rock band works. And I guess the benefit of it is that we have a few of those songs that are like a waltz in B flat. And then sometimes I'll write one that's just kind of a masher on E minor for half the song. So I don't know. I guess a little bit of everything.
I got to tell a quick story that kind of fits in with what we're saying right now. This is about 15 years ago. I don't know what was going on, but some friends were in town that I graduated from high school with. We're all down to the corner bar, and John Reimer was there. He's a drummer. Our friend that taught at Notre Dame, Augie Frieda, he's a guitar player. He was there. I'm a bass player. And this girl who was a year younger than us, she was a concert pianist. She played for the Dallas Symphony Orchestra. Amy Bromley. Mm-hmm. Yes. And
I have
phenomenal. Yeah, phenomenal player. But we're talking like, hey, let's get together and jam sometime. She goes, I can't do that. And Carl's confirmed this too. I said, you can't sit down and throw out a little boogie-woogie tune for us? He goes, no, I got to have music in front of me. Which just astounded me. Yeah. That,
yeah.
You know,
well,
I mean,
there are two ways of learning.
Yeah.
There are two ways of learning. And if you're stuck with the paper in front of you with the notes, improvising can be very, very difficult. Even me, you know, and I can play a simple blues and things like that. I know certain progressions. But if I'm doing a song like one of Tyler's, I'm going to need a roadmap. I'm going to need chord changes, time signatures, all that sort of stuff at the very, very least. But I'm not going to be that good. Trust me. I might be able to chord. But you put me in a church musician with a hymn, I can improv like crazy on that. It's just what it is.
It's kind of shows like how you grew up, Tyler, you know, reading the music, and it's not doing you any good today. You had to improvise other ways and get away from that, I assume.
It did become that, yeah. Fortunately and unfortunately, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for your case, fortunately, because what you're putting out is great stuff. There's no doubt about it. There's talent there. I couldn't be doing what you were doing, but then again, you probably couldn't do what I do. So, you know, it's
exactly.
A trade-off.
Oh, I couldn't.
And none of you can do what I do. So I don't do anything.
Exactly. I didn't want to say that, TC.
Yeah, I'm good at nothing. And it's hard to be good at nothing.
You're a great host.
Yeah.
You're good job, man.
Let's move it on. The next two songs, they both off the same album, We've Got to Roll and At the End of the Day.
Yeah, so those are the last two from Jumping Sharks. And
okay.
Yep, two of my favorites.
All right, well, let's hear them.
How are those?
Came in your head.
You know, I take these videos off of YouTube, and the first one, we've got the roll. I had the little birdies in the beginning and a couple voices in the middle. And what was the one we said, we're off to Buffalo. I heard, maybe Anthony said that, but that was,
yeah.
You know, the video you shot while you guys are on your way up to the studio, I assume. But tell us, why are those your two favorite songs?
Well, I wouldn't even say they're my two favorite, but maybe two favorites so far. I just thought that everything was kind of coming together by then. The fact that we, and actually I could give a good story on those two, but both of them had taken a while to write. Like they weren't one mm-hmm. that I just did in one sitting. Like they were kind of ideas I'd had for a little while and was able to kind of finish them at the right time, like just in time for the album, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, you know, and yeah. we've got the roll. Has such an anthem feeling to it. It feels like an encore song. You know, it seems like it'd get everybody out of their seats and just, it's a good time song. And at the end, that's just phenomenal. I mean, the lyrics were wonderful in that.
Cool. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Carl?
Yeah, that first song. When did you turn into the Eagles?
the harmonies
the harmonies are wonderful.
Yeah,
seriously.
You know, honestly, what I'm hearing is not only just a lot of influences, but they're done well.
Yeah.
You know, and they're done respectfully, right? And that you don't hear as often as you think you do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, thank you.
I like I said before, I absolutely hate comparing bands, but you know there are influences. Everybody has influences. They come through whether you know it or not. The harmonies on that one, I mean, it was just, and that's something that didn't seem like you guys really played with much before, like that type of harmony that you had on that song.
Yeah, I could say a couple quick things there. Not just the studio, but we actually did the harmonies for that one over at Mammoth Studio in Buffalo, where TC, you'd appreciate this, actually, Collective Soul of all bands just was at Mammoth Studio.
Yeah,
and that's
great.
Where we recorded that song, which is not the same one as GCR. It's two different studios in Buffalo. But
yeah.
We've got Soul. Collective Soul was just, I'm not sure what they were up to, but I know one of your favorites. But,
you know that I'm a Collective Soul fan. So,
of course.
Yeah, it's, you know, and one thing I want to say about the Buffalo, it's really underrated for how the music that can come out of there and, the talent and the studios and everything. It's just nobody really thinks of Buffalo as a music town, but boy, it sure is, and it's always been. It's always been that way.
It has, and also on before I forget on the harmony, some of the other musicians I played with from the area, John Tomerlin, Jim Copeland, Lisa Platko. I was in a band with them called Second Act for a few years, and they were very helpful on the harmonies as well.
Their harmonies are phenomenal.
Yeah.
Remember that vet jam we had when they did the national anthem, Star Spangled Banner, at that vet jam to open it up, the last one I did. It was just incredible. It was a moment.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So.
Oh, I bet. But they're great. And I still like to play with them once in a while too. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just fun people, and they're just out there to play for fun, and that's great.
Oh yeah.
They're all great people.
Especially.
Oh, Jimmy's fantastic.
No,
yep. Yeah. And John. I mean, he's such an under the radar guy. So talented. So
we love John. He did the video for We've Got to Roll. I should have mentioned that. Yeah, that was, he filmed
it. Oh, really?
And Lisa's one of the
best singers I've ever worked with. So we could go, yeah, we could go on all day there.
No doubt.
But so there we go on the harmonies for sure.
Okay, so we're moving on to your next album, your latest release, I take it, Ghost in the Doorway. Where was that recorded?
So that one was completely at GCR, and we put that out at the end of 2021. And while we're working on some new stuff and really busy summer here playing, which we'll get into at the end, I'm sure. But the Doorway was just recorded completely at GCR, and after COVID and everything, I had a stockpile of songs, so kind of self-explanatory. We ran with everything we could.
Yeah, I remember you said something one time, we were chatting during that pandemic. You said, I'll have a daughter's writing. So we're going to hear a few of the songs that came out of that. We're going to start with You Just Gotta Believe Me, and then the title track, Ghosts in the Doorway.
I'm
Okay, that was the title track off your 2021 album, Ghosts in the Doorway, and before that, You've Just Gotta Believe Me. Where were you going with this album? I mean, I think you turned another corner as far as the rock and roll part of it goes.
Yeah, on this one, we were just kind of trying to take it even further as a band and kind of have it be even a more cohesive album. And the way we packaged it was that I kind of had it look like a book. And the way, if you had a physical copy, which I could get to you, you open it up and the lyrics are printed out kind of like a short stories thing. Song Ghost in the Doorway was written kind of with that in mind.
Okay. I mean, when you did this album, did you know that was going to be the title? And that was going to be the title song? Or did this just kind of... Go ahead.
It was one of the last written for it. So it was really... I kind of had a ton of songs, and then we started recording them. And then about two-thirds of the way through, you know, Al and Dave and Ant and I, we figured out kind of that was the way to take it. And,
okay.
It wasn't as uplifting of an album as Jumping Sharks, but I don't think it could have been coming at the time it did. It just seemed to be, yeah. But it did. It's been our most successful album, which I'm happy for. But when we play out, sometimes you know we probably mix that one in Jumping Sharks about evenly, honestly.
Okay. If it has a little darker feel to it, you know, I mean, when you go from, we just heard, We've Got to Roll to these songs, you know, it just does have a little darker feeling to it, but it has that hard driving rock and roll sound to it too.
Oh yeah. Carl? Yeah. I think that's our guitarist Al Hancock pitching in too.
Yeah. Now do you give these guys pretty much musical liberty, or do you say, okay, Alan, this is the way I kind of want you to play it?
You know, that's a great question. I think, we try to rehearse together and I show them the song, and if they like how it is, like it's flying with them, then once we get the backing track and if they're into the chords and lyrics I have and melody, then I do kind of give them free rein, and I very rarely do they do something that I'm like, oh, don't do that. You know,
yeah.
Anything.
Yeah.
But, and once in a while, I will say this, I do come up like for Smokescreen, that's going back a few songs, but, and Ghost in the Doorway, I actually came up with the riff, but then I gave it to Al to play because I just knew he'd do a better job with it, and it turned into the main part of the song.
And you're starting to sneak the harmonica in there a little bit.
Oh,
see
I heard
that.
That.
Yep, I knew it. Carl, anything before we hear the last two songs off this album?
No, I'm sort of just, you know, drinking it in and listening to it, and I do hear different things with each of the songs. These were good, two good rockers, man. Ghost. That was really nice.
All right. Let's hear these last two songs that you picked out for this album. Peace of Mind and I Can Still Remember, which I think is about your biggest hit now, isn't it?
It's probably one of those two or the song Ghost in the Doorway. Fortunately, it's been getting the most traction. Actually, our self-titled song was up there too. I do have to bring that one back. That one did. I did an interview with No Depression magazine, which was that's named after an Uncle Tupelo, Wilco, Jeff Tweedy, his previous band. So I had to mention that too. I guess just because I figured you'd appreciate it being a Wilco guy.
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay, Peace of Mind, and I Can Still Remember.
Can I get some peace of mind?
Okay,
nice.
That was Peace of Mind, and I can still remember off the Ghost in the Doorway album from 2021. Now, I can still remember you. Basically, that was a video for you. I mean, a full-on produced video, wasn't it?
Yep. That was another one. We did a lot of that ourselves, just taking little cameras and cell phones along with us, figuring we'd kind of document recording it because we had some extra time that day. That was at GCR as well.
Oh, yes. Okay, Carl, you're going to say something?
Again, I'm just, drinking this all in. Generally, when I listen to music, I have to listen like two or three times, so I'm not saying a whole heck of a lot. But the one thing I do find, particularly in the last four songs, is you're within the 3 to 4 minute, time frame for what was once called FM radio. And that takes a lot of, that takes some strategy and some self-discipline to put something together that's whole, that has has something to say and is musically compact and works. And you do that extremely well.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. We tried to kind of, it kind of been a criticism of a couple of the singles from the Jumping Sharks album, not really a negative criticism, you know what I mean, though, something that we could maybe have picked a couple shorter songs as singles.
Well, thank God you're not the Jerry Garcia and
yeah.
The Bat Crew or something like that.
I love
you for 20 minutes. I would shoot myself. But I really do mean what I say. That takes a lot of discipline, and it comes through very much so.
Well, we all know that there's sort of attention span audiences out there. And just like one of Jeff's songs last night, one of his biggest songs at 6 minutes and 43 seconds, sometimes people get bored with that. They want to be hit in the face with this 3-minute, 4-minute song, and it works out wonderful. You picked out 14 good songs, great songs, that really showed how your career as a band and as a songwriter has progressed from those early Beatles influences right up until, you can tell, I mean, I didn't really see much influence anywhere. It was your own style by the time you got down to it. But with that said, I'm disappointed.
Uh-oh.
You left out one of my favorite Marshmallow Overcoat songs, and it's a song that really wraps up this whole ball of influences to me. And we've talked about the documentary that this, kind of maybe influences. I'm going to play it if you don't mind. It's called Song for Rick Danko.
Oh,
you good with that?
I'm more than good with that. You know what? It was my fault for not including it in the first place.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Song for Rick Danko.
I'm still hanging with her.
Who's got your back, Tyler? I got your back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you know, that song just sums it all up for me as far as Marshmallow Overcoat goes. It's just such a happy song. Of course, it's written for one of your influences. I know you're a big The Band fan, as I was.
Yep. Yep.
And I got your back on one more. I'm going to play one more song. I don't think I could do a show with Tyler Calkins without playing one of his solo songs. This is called Run Away With Everything. We'll be right back.
everything. Oh yeah, someday you're gonna have to learn how to sing, and then you'll see, and you'll run away with everything. You'll run away with everything. You run.
Nice. Now that was recorded.
That really is nice. I like that a lot.
It was a YouTube video. And by the way, everything we heard tonight came off of YouTube. And there's a lot of Tyler's solos on there. And I listened to all of them. And that one just hit me the most. And it looked like you were playing, you're on a stool, playing a guitar, playing a harmonica, and your keyboards were there. Where were you in that song? I couldn't tell.
That was just at a home, at my home studio, which I rarely put something out that I just do at the house. But that was one of the rare instances where I did, was that one of my solo albums there. And that's a song that I probably should bring back. I don't want to say I forget about it, but I probably should play it more.
And I could see the band playing it too. I mean, that's a song that they could transcend. And yeah, it's a beautiful song. I mean, it's everything about it. Everything about it. Carl probably got a Cat Stevens feel on that one.
Yeah, and of course, with the harmonica, I go back to Bob Dylan, too.
There you go, too.
But not the voice.
Yeah.
But not the voice. The voice improved.
Well,
I love Cat and Bob, so thank you.
Yeah. I was really impressed with every song tonight. Carl, you want to just wrap up your end of it, and then we'll let Tyler tell us what's next?
Absolutely. There's a bunch of stuff. We'd like to go through what we call housekeeping, and I need to go through a couple things. The first thing I need to say is that I will be gone from Thursday until Monday. I'll be back Monday. I am going down to Pittsburgh, actually Cranberry Township, for the Monster Bash. There we'll be recording a couple of interviews, one with Sam Irvin, who has directed over 50 films and is a good friend of the podcast. We've got other things planned down there, but we're going to be doing that. So that's nice. Now, I do have a bunch of stuff that's coming up here. Let me just get here for a moment. Okay, so just to give you an idea, So tomorrow we're going to do a Pride Month commentary watch of Tu Wong Fu. Thanks for everything, Julie Newmar. This is one of Rachel's favorite films. We're doing that for Pride Month tomorrow. On Friday, Adam's going to be with the Cathode Ray Mission. And they're going to be doing, his panel's going to be doing a look at the TV show Barry. I get back on Monday, and then on Tuesday, we have filmmaker Joe Bartone is going to be with us, and he has a new film out. Also, we've got the one that I'm very, very happy to announce is on the 22nd. We are going to have Mark Pirro with us. He is the director of a film that we're going to do a commentary watch with the director for Pride Month, and that's Curse of the Queer Wolf. And you may have seen that on USA Up All Night back in the day. But we're going to be doing that. And then on the 24th, I'm going to be doing a music show, and TC is going to be with me. And I'm presenting more new music to fatten your ear holes. So we're going to be doing that. And yes, it has to do with YouTube Premium, but we'll talk about that later. And that's what we have coming up.
And I want to mention real quick, no, there won't be a show next week. Next Sunday, I won't have a show. Saturday, I'm going to the Columbus, Ohio air show to see the Blue Angels. And Sunday, I'm going to Westmoreland County air show to see the Air Force Thunderbirds. Okay, Tyler, what do you got coming up for us?
Well, we have a busy summer, about 20 shows or so over the next 2 months. And my next one's a solo one up at Brewbank in Ridgeway, PA. And then the next month, the band has several shows. And so I don't forget anything. I'll just tell anybody to go to marshmallowovercoat.com. And right on the main page and also on the event page, and that's Marshmallow Overcoat with an E, Mellow. That's also where all my solo gigs are. You could also go to TylerCalkinsMusic.com, but they'll both take you to the same place.
And you guys keep that updated. Boy, there's nothing more annoying. There's nothing more annoying than a band's website not being updated. But any thoughts about the studio? I know you got a lot of music sitting in your brain and sitting on paper scattered about your apartment there or your house.
Well, you know, a couple last things, I guess. I've already got a couple new ideas recorded, and I went up to GCR in Buffalo once already, and I've also been working on some stuff at the house. So before the end of the summer, there should be some word on that. Hopefully.
Man, that's great. You just keep our ear holes happy, man. You know, it was such a pleasure to have you. It was a pleasure to talk to you again. It's been so long. I mean, we're good friends, and we shouldn't be like this. We should talk more often, but it's especially great that you were able to free up some time to come on with us tonight. And you got the link to the show. Put that on your social media, because that link is a forever link. So anybody that didn't get a chance to listen tonight can you know, click on any time and hear what we did tonight. It was great. Carl, any last words for Tyler?
Tyler, it was a pleasure having you on. It's nice to meet you, and keep the music coming, because you're talented, my friend. Very much so.
You both so much, DC and Carl, and pleasure, and wow, what a fun night.
Yeah, isn't
absolutely
it great? Yeah, we're all about fun. It's just nice to find out little info and stuff. It's about the music, and I can't think of a better band to have on here. So, and I'm so glad that I could hopefully expose you to so many more people. For Dave, Alan, Mr. Caballero, the drummer extraordinaire, and everybody,
yeah,
thank you.
I want to say thank you as well.
Yeah, thank you for being you. And I hope to see you guys again soon. I'll see you over the summer, I promise you.
We'll keep in touch. Hope to see you.
I'll catch you. Okay, man. I guess that does it, everybody. Carl, say goodbye.
Absolutely. And we're within the 2-hour range I'm impressed.
Yeah, we did it. Okay,
job.
Tyler, my man. Take care, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
You take care, too. Have a good one.
All right. And as us cool cats say, we'll see you on the flip side.